Hi, hello, and welcome to this episode of The Lives and Styles of Old Hollywood. This one is about Mae Murray, who was known as the girl with the bee-stung lips. One anecdote about Mae Murray says that when the famed actress first saw Billy Wilder's Sunset Boulevard, she exclaimed, "None of us floozies were that nuts." And as Richard Merkin of The New Yorker notes in his 1994 portrait of Mae Murray, "No leading lady was so perfect a caricature of a goddess of the silver screen as Mae Murray. She was a zany stew of platinum curls, petulance, bee-stung lips, and outrageous pretension, who maintained that she was born on my father's boat whilst we were at sea, though records proved that she was born Mary Adrienne Koenig in Portsmouth, Virginia." So yes, Mae Murray was born Marie Adrienne Koenig on May the 10th, 1885 in New York City. The parents of her father had emigrated from France, the parents of her mother from Germany. They were a family of five, with Mae having one older and one younger brother. When Mae was 13 years old, her father died from acute gastritis due to alcoholism, and her mother had to take on a job as a housekeeper for Harry Payne Whitney, a businessman, thoroughbred horse breeder and member of the prominent Whitney family. Mae Murray's childhood was a sad and lonely one, actually. Apparently, she once said that she would have preferred to be spanked than to be left alone the way that she was. From an early age on, Mae Murray wanted to dance to escape the life of sorrow and loneliness. She would start to go to the theater and study the performers. At age 19, Mae made her debut on Broadway with famed dancer Vernon Castle and took the name Mae Murray. The inspiration was the month of her birth and Murray from Murray's, a restaurant on 42nd Street. By the age of 21, she joined the chorus line of the Ziegfeld Follies and became headliner in 1915 at age 30. It was also during her time at the Ziegfeld Follies that she got the moniker "the girl with the bee-stung lips" because of the shape of her lips. She was a great dancer and became a star in the US and in Europe, performing with the likes of Clifton Webb, Rudolph Valentino and John Gilbert. Initially, Mae Murray was not very interested in Hollywood. She wanted to be a star on the stage and not in front of a lonely camera. One of the representatives of Hollywood actually had to ambush her in her dressing room at the Ziegfeld Follies and talk to her in person to be able to convince her. Actually, nothing he said about making her a star had an impact until he said something about a red carpet. Apparently, that was the one and only thing that made Murray listen closely, and she finally agreed to go to Hollywood. She made her screen debut in To Have and To Hold in 1916 at the age of 31 and became one of Universal's major stars. She would work consistently throughout the years and would also appear with her former dance partner Rudolph Valentino on the screen in 1919's The Delicious Little Devil and in Big Little Person. Her films proved to be financially successful and popular with the audiences. When she filmed for a movie, she demanded music to be played to be able to emote the character. In 1921, Murray eventually founded her own production company, Tiffany Pictures, together with her husband Robert Z. Leonard, to film 8 movies that were released by MGM. Although Leonard was good for Murray in her career, because he made great movies with her in it and cared for her well-being, it was actually detrimental to her self-image, because she started to think very highly of herself and being better than others. Tiffany Pictures actually was a poverty row studio with lesser budgets, lesser known stars and lower production volumes. It released about 70 features, both silent and sound, and at one point the company was able to book its movies in nearly 2,500 theaters. But it lacked a profitable distribution system and had to file for bankruptcy in 1932. Mae Murray appeared in 1925's The Merry Widow opposite John Gilbert under the direction of Erich von Stroheim, the one film she is still remembered for. Although The Merry Widow could have been the start of a lasting career for Mae because of the work with Stroheim, who tore away at her artificial gestures and found an honest-to-God actress underneath the tinsel and temper, it was the beginning of a decline in Hollywood. She made her sound debut in 1930's Peacock Alley and Bachelor Apartment, and did one last movie in 1931, which was called High Stakes. Mae Murray's career declined from that time onwards, because in the late 1920s she was involved in many court cases. Either she was sued or she sued, The amount sued over varied between a few hundred dollars or $1.5 million in a lawsuit against the company Tiffany Productions. For example, Murray was sued by Sylvia of Hollywood, then a famous Hollywood fitness guru. Apparently, May Murray owed Sylvia $2,125, which today would be roughly $38,000. The following court case was very detailed and humiliating for May Murray. Another court case, which brought her down, was about a house she had bought on San Vicente. It became known as the house that Jack built. Murray had paid $50,000 for it, including antiques. It turned out, though, that the house was basically a shed. Only the cheapest materials and the worst handiwork used for building it. The antiques were mere copies. Basically, she had to completely destroy the house and build it up again because it was such crap. And she sued the man who sold it to her, Jack Donovan. The courtroom became a hotspot for fans and a garden for what can only be described as the best entertainment possible, because there were lies and accusations on both sides, and lots of dramatic scenes, including May Murray fainting and giving herself a bad bruise on the head when touching the chair going down. When the case was settled after 5 years, May had lost lots of money on the lawsuit, on rebuilding the house that Jack built, and building a second, even grander oceanfront home for herself and a fourth husband, David Mdivani. That one proved to be even more of a problem, with parts of it washing out to sea. Her haughty behavior displayed throughout the well-publicized court case, her spectacularly bad judgments in both personal and business affairs, which were clear to see for everyone involved, and her willingness to be engaged in lawsuits, did not win May Murray any friends in Hollywood. Her career took a final blow when her fourth and last husband, David Mdivani, also became a manager and advised her to leave MGM, the studio with which Murray had had a long and successful relationship with. She did follow his advice, though, and made Louis B. Mayer her enemy. When she finally realized her mistake, she went to Mayer and asked to be able to return to MGM, but Mayer did not rehire her. He actually blacklisted her for all other studios with this refusal. On top of that, her husband, David Mdivani, basically squandered all of May Murray's remaining money after her court cases and then left her. She had to sell off her oceanfront house and her cars to get out of debt, and she became rather destitute in the end. In the 1940s, May Murray would regularly appear at Billy Rose's Diamond Horseshoe, a nightclub which was recreating the good old times, and May recreated all dance routines and performed scenes from her famous movies. Although her dancing was well received, her heavy makeup and youthful costumes were judged to be attempts to conceal her age, as she was already in her mid-50s. She would also teach ballroom dance to teenagers in 1946, when she was 61 years old. May Murray lived in poverty for most of her old age and moved into the Motion Picture House, the charitable organization that she had helped support when she had been a member of the board of trustees at the Motion Picture and Television Fund, which supported those in the industry without resources. In the end, ironically, she needed the help. In 1964, May Murray, then 78 years old, was found in St. Louis, disoriented and lost in the city, believing to be in New York City. Eventually, she died on March 23, 1965, at the age of 79, at the Motion Picture House in Woodland Hills, California, and is interred in Valhalla Memorial Park Cemetery in North Hollywood. So this is the very colorful and, in the end, tragic life of May Murray. So what is with the people and the loves of May Murray? First, there was William M. Schwenker Jr., her first husband. 23-year-old May Murray eloped with William M. Schwenker Jr. in 1908. He was the son of a brewery supply dealer, and this well-to-do father cut off his son's allowance upon the news of the wedding. Because he had not been invited to the lavish reception, but had received the bill that he did not intend to pay. The restaurant where the lavish breakfast had taken place sued Schwenker and Murray, the first court case for Murray. Murray had indeed married Schwenker for his money, but she was doing all the work in the marriage, provided the money and did the household chores on top. So the couple divorced a quick 2 years after the nuptials. 6 years later, in 1914, May Murray married a second time, this time Jay O'Brien, a former dancer and future Olympic bobsled champion who had been married to Irene Fenwick before. They had met in New York after Murray's divorce from husband number one, and apparently it had been love at first sight. The reason why Murray had not engaged in a relationship back then was that O'Brien had a reputation for gambling and a fast temper. By 1916, she hoped that he had changed. He had not. But nevertheless, they did get engaged and got married very quickly. How is quite unclear, as there are different accounts. One claiming he forced her on gunpoint, the other that demanded to be married right on the set of a film. After the nuptials, they went to the Hollywood Hotel, but after 2 hours, O'Brien kicked Murray down the staircase leading up to their suite. She left him and fell in love with husband number 3, Robert Z. Leonard. Actor, director, producer and screenwriter Leonard married May Murray in 1918 after having had an affair with the married star for over a year. Between 1916 and 1924, they made 25 movies together. Leonard was the one who made her appear way younger on screen as she was in reality by filming her through gauze, which hid her wrinkles. They divorced in 1925. 1 year later, in 1926, 41-year-old May Murray married David Mdivani of the notorious Mdivani brothers. Mdivani was a fortune hunter and claimed to be a prince. He was the one who advised Murray to resign from MGM and squandered all her money. They divorced in 1933 and Murray was left with hardly any money. In 1928, it became known that Murray had given birth to a son 6 months prior to the wedding, who was christened Coran Mdivani. Murray's financial situation was so dire that when Coran became seriously ill in 1936 and had to undergo a double mastoid operation, she handed him over to Daniel Cunning, the physician treating him. Subsequently, Coran was raised by Cunning and his wife. When Murray wanted to take back custody of her son 3 years later, the Cunnings refused, and a bitter custody dispute amongst all three parties, May Murray, David Mdivani and the Cunnings, erupted. In 1940, it was settled and gave Murray legal custody of her child, with Mdivani paying $400 a month in support. Nevertheless, Coran stayed with Bess Cunning and her husband and was adopted by them that same year under the name Daniel Michael Cunning. He would not see his mother again until her death. May Murray really is a cautionary tale. And she had heaps of style. May Murray was known for her over-the-top costumes and exaggerated emoting. She was very impulsive and very susceptible to flattery. Murray is said to have chased John Gilbert, who walked off the set of The Merry Widow, in nothing but her shoes. And she has called von Stroheim the dirtiest hun in Hollywood to his face. She partied. She had a white Rolls Royce and a matching Borzoi, as well as a canary yellow Pierce Arrow, and a uniformed chauffeur to get her places. As we heard before, May Murray loved big houses and wanted to live in style. She was flamboyant and extroverted and loved to live life. That was her style, that is what she portrayed. Some miscellaneous facts about the actress. In the early 1920s, May Murray, who probably was about 35 years old, was painted by Hollywood portrait painter Theodore Lukacs. The painting by the name of Symphony in Shade and Gold, the actress May Murray, is housed in a private collection in North Carolina nowadays. In it, May Murray is naked and gazes into a handheld mirror. Second miscellaneous fact, May Murray is one of the three actresses whose eyes would become the logo of the Chicago International Film Festival. The other two pairs of eyes belong to Paula Negri and Theda Bera. At the height of her career, May Murray actually wrote a weekly column for William Randolph Hearst. And finally, May Murray is rumored to be the inspiration for the abusive and borderline delusional character of Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard. So, what are the life lessons of this very colorful lady? So, first, never let anybody make decisions for you. May just left MGM and thus ruined her career because her husband, who had no idea about the business, advised her to. So never listen to people that have either no idea or their own interests at heart. It's your life, your livelihood. Let nobody decide for you. You are the one making the decisions that feel best for you and with your experience. Second, know your money. You have to be in charge of your finances. Never let anybody deal with it, spend it recklessly, or believe that others can do it better than you. Especially women tend to think that men are born with some sort of financial management gene, and that is not the case. Actually, men are proven to be way worse with money than women when investing. So take responsibility and take charge in your own financial security and independence. Third life lesson, don't get engaged in petty accusations and keep your dignity. Maymory's downfall was at least partially caused by her incessant lawsuits and accusations that kept the papers as well as the audiences on the edge of their seats. Never get so low to get involved in such behavior. You will not only lose a lot of money, you will also lose credibility, sympathy, and above all, your dignity. So always take a seat back, breathe, and think about what is worth getting involved in. Never steep low. Fourth, your image matters. Although a little press might have been quite career enhancing, Maymory's personal brand was damaged because of how she presented herself in court and to the public. Her image of the flamboyant, extroverted, fun-loving, beautiful dancer became clouded by her appearances and testimonies. Your image is not only the way you dress and how you are photographed, it is also about how you talk to people, how you conduct business, how you show up, what you do, and how you do it. Maymory's image pre-courtroom was absolute gold. Her cars, her dog, her chauffeur, her face, her clothes, her career. It was a flamboyant, beautiful extravaganza that people simply loved. And this image made Maymory a very rich woman. But her behavior in court, coupled with her misjudgments in business and people, her marriage to the scamming Mdivani, her ensuing decline in public favor, as well as her blacklisting in Hollywood, all contributed to her downfall and her poverty in old age. So your image matters. Your reception by the people around you and in business matter. So be the one in charge. Be in charge of your image, your personal branding, and how you show up in the world. And the last life lesson, we are all human. Maymory's downfall was partially also her fault because she believed herself to be better than others. She let her fame get the better of her. She was not gracious, not willing to be kind and forgiving and empathetic. And these are absolutely essential human qualities we need in a functioning society. So always keep in mind that we are all flying around in space on a rock and we have all come from one big bang, from one particle. We are all one. We are all connected. We are all human. Nobody is better. Nobody is worse. We are all the same. Keep that in mind when you interact with people, because that would give you the most dignified touch and image of them all. So this is the episode on Maymory. I hope you enjoyed it. And as usual, I enjoyed researching this episode and talking to you. I hope you're having a wonderful week, and I can't wait to talk to you next time. Bye.